Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Vegan Proteins Muscles by Brussels Radio. My name is Danny.
And I'm Giacomo.
And this is our 66th episode. Everybody, thanks so much. Welcome back. We're happy to have you. We hope you've had a good couple of weeks. Giacomo and I definitely have. We celebrated our 5th wedding anniversary on Saturday.
That's what I was forgetting to talk about. That was fun.
It was fun. You know, weird. Definitely a weird one because there wasn't a ton that you could do. But we did get to do some fun stuff and I really enjoyed it.
Well, we went apple picking. I feel like we ate something really delicious in between apple picking and going to the haunted house, which I had a blast at, by the way.
We tried to eat something very delicious, in case you forgot. We ordered a pizza at this place that makes awesome vegan pizzas, and when it came, we realized that it was not vegan, and that sucked a lot, because for so many reasons it sucked a lot. One being we had to order it way in advance, and it was takeout, and it wasn't one of those obvious things where you open it and you're like, oh, they screwed this up. We were like sitting down to eat it when we realized that it was definitely not vegan cheese on it. And it's not even like we could give it away because of COVID. So yeah, it was a pickle pizza and I was really looking forward to it. But don't worry, because I made a recreation the following night at home.
Meanwhile, I'm like, it's okay. And then you played to that and you're like, yeah, vegan cheese has come such a far away because this stuff looks surprisingly like vegan cheese, but it's not.
Yeah, I was thinking about how like when I first went vegan, I wouldn't have thought for one millisecond that that pizza was vegan because vegan cheese back then tasted like dirty feet. And now vegan cheese tastes really, really, really good and pretty spot on. But yeah, that sucked. We haven't had an incident like that where we got non-vegan food by accident in a really, really long time. But you know, it happens. It happens to everybody where you accidentally end up with non-vegan food in front of you. Maybe you take a bite of it or maybe you realize it beforehand. But you know, if that happens to you, don't feel bad about it. Just, you know, we're always trying to do our best and thought maybe it would be helpful if you guys knew that even I've been vegan for, actually this month is the beginning of my 19th year as a vegan, and sometimes mistakes like that do still happen. Just learn from it, don't do it again. Obviously we did not eat the pizza. I think that's important to say. We weren't like, oh well, we have this anyway, let's just eat it.
And when we were done afterwards, because we wound up salvaging the day with soup and hummus wrap. However, we finished it off with this bakery that just so happened to be open. I don't remember the name of it. It was really good.
Jody B. Bakes.
Jody B. Bakes in Salem, Mass. Definitely recommend it. And we were so nervous, we just asked them straight up. We're like, can you please tell us what's vegan because you're a vegetarian bakery? And they were like, in hindsight, the sign was right there that had all listed. But long story short, we had a whoopie pie and a macadamia nut cookie. And they were so, like, such good sweet treats.
But when I saw that they were going to be open and they had all of these restrictions, like, that they were going to be doing things very differently, I was like, it actually looks like they're doing a good job with this. So we checked it out.
Yeah. And it was surprisingly terrifying for what I would think would be hard to do because the actors were
like neutered.
Basically. I mean, no, literally, they had them behind plexiglass.
Yeah. A lot of them were behind plexiglass. They couldn't come anywhere near you. Which yeah. Normally they get right up in your face. But I enjoyed it a lot because I just love Halloween so much that I would have gone just to see sets with no actors at all. I would have been happy with that.
The sets were really good. I don't know why, but for some reason I was actually shook this time around, which is crazy. Because
I know why.
Why?
I know exactly why. So normally when we go to haunted houses, it's me and Giacomo and maybe my brother and his girlfriend and my sister and my mom and my stepdad. It's a lot of us. And the guys always push us gals, usually me and my mom especially, they push us way up to the front so that we are the first ones to see whatever is behind the corners. And the guys stand back like, oh, we're so tough. We're not afraid of anything. But this time, It was just me and Giacomo. There was nobody to walk in front of him, and I've never seen him so jumpy and so spooked.
They came at me, and I was like, please don't come at me, bro.
They came at you. They couldn't even come within 6 feet of you. They were nowhere near you. What do you mean?
But I digress.
A good anniversary was had.
Yeah, for sure. Anyways.
In some other news before we jump into today's topic, we wanted to let you guys know that the Facebook group, the Muscles by Brussels Facebook group, has been resurrected, and it's been going really well, and you guys should join it. It's just on Facebook, search Muscles by Brussels group, and boom, there it is. And there's been a lot of good activity in there. So we would love to have you. You can ask questions about the podcast or questions you want on the podcast. Just talk about general vegan health and fitness. And the other super cool thing that we have going on is we have teamed up with a friend and client and registered dietitian, Natalie Pape, who is obviously a vegan athlete herself, and she is going to be writing some really kick-ass articles for the website. And we have our first one from her up, went up last week, and it is all about vegan omegas. So essential fatty acids, how do you reach your omega-3s on a vegan diet? It is such a great article. I learned a lot. I actually really believe, and I'm not just saying this because I wouldn't do that, I really think it's probably the best article about vegan omega-3s on the entire internet that I have ever read.
It's really comprehensive. I feel like we had pretty high expectations and they were blown out of the water on this one. It's definitely worth the read. It's a little bit of a long read, but you get so much information out of it.
We have a couple of other articles lined up, but if there are any specific nutrients that you want to learn about how to hit on a vegan diet, let us know. So what are we talking about today, Giacomo?
Well, we had a community request for this episode, and I say, why not? Let's go for it. Gut health, right? How does gut health affect us? I mean, why don't we talk about what gut health is first? Your gut is also known as your microbiome. And what it is basically trillions of bacteria, healthy bacteria that is in your intestine and in your stomach. And that bacteria helps you digest your food, which helps you absorb nutrients and otherwise keep a healthy internal working system so that you can have a healthy body. As a matter of fact, they're classifying your gut now as its own separate organ. And although there's more than just the bacteria in your intestine and in your stomach, in other words, there's bacteria in your skin and your saliva, that is where the most of it is found.
Yeah, so your gut is everything from your mouth to your butt. It's entry to exit and everything in between. And the gut microbiome, like Giacomo said, they're now categorizing it as its own organ. And there are trillions, not just bacteria. There's also fungus, there's viruses, there's all kinds of bacteria, like you said, good and bad in there. And they all kind of perform their own tasks, so to speak. And they also act like a unit that sends messages to your central nervous system back and forth all day, every day, to the point that a lot of times it's being discussed as the quote, second brain, as though your gut and your gut microbiome is a second brain.
Correct.
Because it dictates everything in your body. And you know what it makes me think of? Those zombie ants. Do you remember? Mm-hmm. Do you remember the zombie ants?
Boy, do I.
So that's what gut microbiome makes me think of. Like, we have these teeny tiny little creatures, these little critters inside of us, and they actually control us. We have no free will. It's just the gut microbiome forcing us to do everything. That's not true. That's just an actual weird thing that I think sometimes.
No, I think there is some truth to it. They're literally calling it a second human. I mean, that's how important your gut is.
And I feel like talking about gut health in general, it gets oversimplified a ton, partially because it has to, because it's so complicated and it's still being studied at length. Like, scientists, microbiologists, they are knee deep in this research with some conclusions, but not a ton of conclusions, not enough conclusions that somebody could come out and say, I know everything there is to know about gut health. So we really want to preface this episode With that, the people that have dedicated their entire lives to studying the gut microbiome, they don't yet have all the answers. They're searching for them, but they don't have all the answers. Giacomo and I, and any other coach or influencer in the world, we certainly do not have all the answers. We don't even have most of the answers. But when it comes to veganism and fitness, and particularly transitioning to a vegan diet, there are some things that we do know to be quite helpful. So that's going to be the bulk of what the episode is going to be about today.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely where we are more in our lane than not. Honestly, simple is best. And the things that you can do to take control over your gut health, those are the things I feel are worth focusing on.
But I think it's important to give like a very basic explanation of how the gut works, at least in terms of digestion.
Break it down for us.
We mentioned there's trillions of these little creatures, these little bacterias. To make it very simple, imagine that certain bacteria eat certain things. So bacteria are little creatures. They need to eat just like we do. Again, this is an oversimplification, but hopefully you will get the gist. Let's say there are some bacteria that eat vegetables and some bacteria that eat starchy carbohydrates or some bacteria that eat protein or oils or what have you. There are specific bacteria that eat specific things, that digest specific things. So you really want to have a great variety of gut bacteria, right? Does this make sense so far? In order to have good digestion, mm-hmm. like if I eat something that's really oily, for example, but I don't have a lot of bacteria that specifically eats oils, I might have trouble digesting that really oily meal.
Mm-hmm.
For example, or if I have not eaten a vegetable in my life and then one day decide I'm going to be a raw vegan, I probably am not going to have the best bacteria to digest a ton of raw vegetables, right? Because mm-hmm. what happens if you don't feed something for long enough? It starves and it dies. And these colonies of bacteria can die off and then you're left without them. Or you could, you know, get sick, have to run a course of antibiotics, and antibiotics kill not just bad bacteria, but all bacteria, and you can screw up your gut colonies that way as well. So it's important to realize that your gut bacteria can change. It can be damaged by eating crappy food, by being too stressed out, by running a course of antibiotics. It can be damaged in a lot of ways, and most of the time you can fix it. But according to this research that's out there right now, sometimes it can be irreparably damaged. Like you can never get those bacteria back.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we want to have the best variety possible.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to throw too much fear into the mix. I do feel like we can always heal ourselves. I mean, whether we are weathering ourselves down with enjoying substances and like in not in moderation, like maybe you're a smoker and you smoke too much, or you're a drinker and you drink too much, or you have too much stress on your plate, you're not doing a job managing it, like your environment, your behaviors, or maybe you're just not favoring whole foods enough. Whatever it is that you do that can destroy your healthy bacteria, I feel like there's always a way to repair it and put yourself in a position where your environment will be more conducive towards your overall health.
I also think it's worth noting that what this means, if you don't have certain kind of types of bacteria that get the nutrients from the foods that you need, then that means that sometimes eating healthy might not be enough to have your body kind of create these nutrients, these chemicals that you need. For example, tryptophan. Tryptophan, you know, we all know about it being in turkey, obviously. We don't eat turkey. It's also found in chia seeds, for example. There are certain bacteria that essentially turn the tryptophan into serotonin and melatonin. So you could eat all the chia seeds, right? Because mm-hmm. you know they're really good for you. But if you don't have that particular kind of bacteria that does that, you may not get those serotonin and melatonin effects. Obviously, what's within our control? Eating very healthy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Duh. But if the gut bacteria is, if the ratios are skewed or if it's thrown off, it can affect how we digest, absorb, etc., the food that we're actually eating.
Right, for sure. And looking at something as simple as food, you can think of the ways in which you can wind up having an overgrowth of bacteria you don't want or an undergrowth of bacteria that you do want. I mean, something as simple as leaning too hard on hyperpalatable foods that are perhaps lined with artificial flavors and chemicals that do not contribute anything of value to your health and are arguably harder to digest, not helpful. In moderation, not a big deal. If you lean too heavily in that direction, your gut is going to find a way to adapt to it, and hence that's the system that you're going to run with. So that's just one example. This isn't like to say go screaming in the direction of whole foods. Here's the part where I feel like it's a little weird and less practical. I feel like we get into patterns of behavior when it comes to foods, and we start to just enjoy eating a certain way. I mean, speaking from personal experience, Danny, I'll go for periods of time where I'm favoring mostly whole foods, and I'll go through periods of time where I'm favoring mostly processed foods. And I just wind up falling into the trap. And I wonder how much of it is just because my body adapts to eating a certain way, and it wants to continue eating that certain way, even if it's not necessarily serving me from a health-based standpoint.
Well, I mean, we could have that conversation all day. Like, is it your body that's becoming dependent on it, or is it your brain, like, forming these almost addiction? Like, that's, it's a good point, but I feel like it's, like, a different topic.
Yeah.
But I do think that this idea that you do want to have a variety of foods. You want to make sure you're eating a variety of foods, because in excluding entire food groups for a long period of time, you can shoot yourself in the foot by killing off the colony of bacteria that digests those particular foods. And then what happens when you reintroduce that food? It becomes the self-fulfilling prophecy where you eat it and you're like, see, I knew I just shouldn't have been eating this in the first place, because then you feel like crap when you eat it. Because it's just sitting there fermenting and not being properly digested in your gut. Let's move on to vegans. Like, vegans specifically tend to have, I would say, two major gut complaints that I hear over and over, that I see in a forum, like a Facebook group, every single day. Like, at least once a day I see this question. Can you guess? Can you guess what the two complaints are?
My wheels are spinning, but I'm drawing a blank. Help
me out
here. Seriously,
you're drawing a blank?
Okay. Digestive discomfort, like feeling bloaty, for example, and wondering if it's just like you being uncomfortable in your skin, perhaps, or just like, oh, a gassiness. Like when someone's like, oh my gosh, I went vegan and I just, that's it. Like my gas is through the roof. I can't keep eating this way, and I can't do it and get all my protein in. What gives?
Yeah, that's it. Bloating and gas. When someone first goes vegan, they are like blown away by how much bloating and gas they might experience. Now, this didn't happen to me. I don't know. Did it happen to you?
No.
I mean, honestly, this is not to say that I never have bouts of bloating or gassiness, but I don't remember this huge hump I had to get over when I first went vegan. But we'll get into it. I think I just figured out why, actually. It's because I was a crappy vegan, but we'll explain that in a second. Based on what we just talked about, how, you know, you might not have the bacteria that digests vegetables, or the bacteria that digests beans or fiber. And then you go from, you know, eating no fiber to eating a ton of fiber overnight. All of that stuff is just trapped in your stomach, like not being properly broken down. And it's releasing a lot of gas. And that gas makes you feel bloated and obviously flatulent as well. So when you think about it that way, it actually makes perfect sense. It's not vegetables and beans inherently bloat you, in most cases. It's that you just don't have the right equipment to break them down yet.
For sure. And I feel like an easy out here would be like to supplement, because that's the kind of mindset I feel like Western civilization adapts. It's like, okay, we'll take a probiotic, you'll be all right. And the truth is that probiotics can help. However, they're not a cure-all, and we don't know to what extent they can help. So arguably they make perhaps a little bit of a dent and do benefit your bacteria and your gut health in some way. But to this day, even with the ever-growing research, we do not have any conclusive evidence that probiotics are going to be a game changer as far as your microbiome is concerned and its health.
That wouldn't be my first stop. If I was experiencing this, that's not where I personally would start. The place where I would start would be to increase my fiber count slowly. Slowly. So a recent study in the Journal of Nutrition stated that 97% of Americans are not hitting their minimum fiber requirement of 15 grams.
That's awful.
It's pretty bad. The recommendation for most adults is 30 grams. I personally think that is too low. Mm-hmm. But 15 grams, 97% of Americans are not getting 15 grams of fiber. Like, maybe I'm naive, but I actually find that hard to believe. How is that possible?
Maybe people are still like on a straight up Atkins diet. No idea.
Anyway, if that's true, and then you go vegan, like honestly, even if you go junk food vegan, which I don't recommend for a lot of reasons, but even if you did, you would still get way more than 15 grams of fiber. But if you try to go whole food vegan overnight, which is what a lot of people do, and we've talked about how that can be really tricky for people right out of the gate. This is one of the reasons, is because it can cause a lot of digestion issues at first. You can be going from, you know, maybe getting 10 grams of fiber a day to 70 or 80 grams of fiber overnight, mm-hmm. and it's gonna hurt like the dickens.
Well, this is where I feel like more is not necessarily better. Even when it comes to eating a predominantly whole food diet, you still have to do the work and pay attention and find a way to balance what is on your plate, especially if your goal is to be an athlete and an athlete who performs well, whether your goals are physique-based or not. I mentioned this yesterday on one of the Facebook groups because I feel pretty strongly about it. I know there's like this line in the sand that we try to draw when we say this is whole foods and plant-based and this is not, and this is processed and this is not. Like, honestly, I'll just go on a limb here and say, as far as I'm concerned, seitan, whole food. As far as I'm concerned, tofu, whole food. That's what I think. I mean, no, it's not something you pull out of the ground. However, I mean, it's not that complicated either. We're really just talking about wheat or soy being prepared as a plant-based meat, you know, and you can get your protein in and you don't have to worry about, I don't know, having 7 cups of beans a day in order to meet your protein requirements if you need it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I kind of agree with you. I can see seitan and tofu as being a whole food because you can literally take whole wheat flour and, you know, kind of wash it or rinse it with water until you get seitan. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know how that's different from making a glass of juice where you are extracting the fiber. But anyway, that's kind of semantics about what is whole food, what is clean eating, whatever. But you're right that I personally think that it's really important to have a variety of food. But in terms of getting enough fiber, I would say, you know, this is a good time to try and track your food for a little bit, which I think somebody should do when they're going vegan anyway. Track your food, see how much you're eating, because people are usually dramatically under eating calories. And if you're eating a ton of vegetables and feeling super full, you're even more likely to under eat calories because you feel so full, even though you actually aren't full of food. You're full of gas and bloat from super high fiber. Mm. I would say walk it up incrementally. You can have too much fiber. You absolutely can have too much fiber, but your body will become accustomed to higher fiber over time. And I've seen people be able to tolerate, you know, 70-ish grams of fiber per day well, tolerate it well. I think much higher than that, and you really do run the risk of basically just not absorbing your vitamins and minerals properly. There are some people who will agree with me and some who will disagree with me, and that's fine. But you have to find the right amount of fiber for you. And overall, this switch towards whole foods is a good thing. There will eventually be a shift in the colony of bacteria in your gut. The research shows it will be a shift away from pathogenic bacteria and more towards protective bacteria, because we all know that whole plant foods are very good for you and very protective for mm-hmm. you.
Yes. The fiber, the prebiotics, what you're talking about, they literally feed the bugs in your stomach, the healthy bacteria. Those trillions of bacteria are fed by that fiber, by those prebiotics. And then you have certain foods that help break molecules from larger sized ones into smaller sized ones before they even hit the lining of your stomach. Foods that are high in digestive enzymes, high in protease to help you digest protein, high in amylase to help you digest carbohydrates, and high in lipase, exactly, that help you digest fat. And those digestive enzymes are found in all kinds of whole foods. I could rattle off a list to you, but I don't want this to become like a technical episode where we just start spouting off healthy things. I mean, the answer is simple. Eat your fruits, eat your vegetables, and eat them often.
But let's say that you are vegan and you're having this bloat and gassiness and you are at your wit's end. Nobody wants to be bloated and gassy. Nobody is happy with that. It's embarrassing. It can be painful sometimes, and it can last for days or longer. And we want to give you some practical advice to kind of mitigate some of those things as best you can. So the first thing I would say, very simply, check your fiber intake. If you're a new vegan, try bringing it back down and then walking it back up more slowly, just picking lower fiber foods. There are plenty of vegan foods that are lower in fiber, white rice versus brown rice, a white bread or a mixed bread versus a whole grain bread, even something like a carrot versus a Brussels sprout. It's going to be lower in fiber. But if you've been vegan for a long time, you can also take a look at your fiber. Maybe it's just really, really high and you just need to get it a little bit lower than that and keep it there. You could also try drinking more water. Water binds to fiber and hopefully will help kind of sweep it out. If you've ever taken a fiber supplement like psyllium husk, which is spelled with a P, by the way, it kind of turns into like a jelly. You're supposed to mix it in a glass of water and it turns into like this disgusting jelly. So that's what will happen if you drink a lot of water when you're full of fiber. It should help it kind of jellify and move along, as opposed to, you know, just having this dry lump of fiber in you. Too much fiber can cause constipation or diarrhea. It's a mixed bag. It's a crapshoot. But let's talk about gassiness, because this is definitely like the bloat is uncomfortable. And yes, you can have that kind of like pregnant belly by the end of the day. But gassiness is the real kicker, the ruiner of relationships, the office workplace embarrasser. What do we do about gassiness?
Well, I know some people just wind up biting the bullet and getting charcoal underwear. Yeah. Ouch. Yikes. That does exist. I'm not going to call it anyone's name here.
We're gonna it's keep... not me. let me clarify.
Okay. As embarrassing as this is, I have no shame. I tried it once on prep. It was really bad. And I'll never do it again. I thought that it was unnecessary. But desperate times call for desperate measures.
Charcoal underwear?
I wound up buying some. I think we were traveling and I'm like, I can't do this to people on the plane. I can't do it to Dan. You didn't know about that one, huh?
No.
I kept that real DL. Maybe I do feel shame, actually.
Yeah, I think I would have mortified you. Jesus.
Basically. But yeah, no. I feel like you have to give it 3 months. Give any period of time where you're making adjustments in your diet, even if you're already vegan, give it 3 months. Because, like, for example, if you're eating a certain way, like if you're eating all uncooked food and you try to go to cooked food, even though you're vegan, you're going to have a tough time digesting it. If you're going to all processed food, to all whole food, even as a vegan, you're going to have a difficult time digesting it.
But this all goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning. If you don't eat something regularly, you don't have the bacteria to digest that thing. So when you start eating that thing, it's going to be uncomfortable at first. Mm-hmm. I understand what you're saying. Give it 3 months for it to level out, but no one wants to be fart city for 90 days. So
you're tracking your fiber is what you're saying.
Right. But beyond that, the next thing that I have my clients do when this is happening is pay attention to what are you eating that is making you feel like this. The first thing that I eliminate if somebody is feeling really gassy, especially if they just started working with us, because everybody who works with us is already vegan, or at least they're trying to be vegan. But for most of them, it's a pretty big increase in protein. That is easily the biggest thing. And when you increase your protein, if you don't have a lot of that bacteria that digest protein, you're gonna be gassy. So one of the things that I have people eliminate is pea protein. If they are using a protein powder that has pea protein in it, think about higher protein, and then peas are also a legume, right? Beans, you know what they say about that. Pea protein seems to give people a lot of bloating, a lot of gas. So we will pull that out first, see if that fixes it. A lot of times that change alone will make the gassiness go away. The next thing that I have people look at, if that doesn't do it, is cruciferous vegetables. Cruciferous vegetables are a much gassier type of vegetable than a lot of other vegetables. So that's broccoli, kale, collards, Brussels sprouts, cabbage. These can make people really gassy. And in particular, it can make pretty smelly gas. Because one thing that's important to note is some gas is normal. If you never, ever, ever have any gas, that is probably not good. Some gas is normal, but you know when you're having a pretty bad gassy episode. And the cruciferous vegetables can be a big part of it. So You can try cutting those out for a while and then reintroducing them in smaller amounts. You can also try cooking them very well and reintroducing them in smaller amounts, because the more you cook it, you know, the hot water breaks, kind of starts breaking it down for you. So that can be helpful as well. And there's lots of non-cruciferous vegetables that are really, really great for you too. So I'm not saying cut out vegetables. I'm saying try taking those out for a little bit. And hopefully you'll only have to do that for a short period of time before you can start reintroducing them in small doses.
Right. We all have a certain happy place where it's not like you can have cruciferous vegetables. It's not like you can have a certain amount of pea protein. It's just that you need to find your sweet spot for these foods as opposed to having them dominate your meal plan.
We also haven't talked about beans at all. Beans, okay. Okay. All of us grew up hearing that vegetarians that didn't eat meat, they got their protein from beans. That's what we heard. So a lot of people, when they go vegetarian or vegan, they take the meat off their plate and they replace it with beans. Not only are beans high in fiber and protein, two things that you may not have been getting a lot of before, they also have oligosaccharides in them, which we can't digest. Like, we can't actually break it down. But you can get used to it and not have a gassy problem with it after a while. Most people, not everybody. So some tips for that would be, if you're using canned beans, rinse them really, really well. If you're using dry beans, soak them overnight, cook them really well. The longer you cook them, the better. Again, it helps to break that down, and the rinsing gets some of that oligosaccharide off of them. And you can also, I've heard, and I have not tried this myself because I don't have this problem, I've heard you can cook your beans with like a strip of kombu seaweed in it, and it also helps to break that down. And if none of that works, you can take Beanzyme, which is a vegan version of Beano. It contains the enzyme to help break beans down. Beans are great for you. They're one of the highest indicators of longevity. How many beans somebody eats in their life is a huge indicator of how long they're gonna live. They're great for you. But just like the vegetables, introduce in small amounts.
Right. I'm trying to like find a way in my head to rework that old jingle, if you get the reference, about beans, where you don't have to fart to feel good.
I don't know the jingle. Please don't share it with me.
I promise I won't. Anyways, yeah, so all of these things can make the transition a little smoother while you're making choices that are arguably better for your health in general.
There's another interesting theory, and I guess it's just a theory about why when some people go vegan, they have more gas. Vegan food is more voluminous, right? It's bigger, like physically bigger, which means you need to take more bites of it to eat it. And if you're taking more bites, you're probably swallowing more air. Swallowing air is a way to get gas. Like, if you swallow air, guess what? You have that air inside of you. Chewing more slowly and more thoroughly can be helpful. Mm-hmm. Not scarfing your food down. Giacomo, I'm looking at you. laying off of things like gum and soda water. Mm. Now Giacomo's looking at me. Those things can all be helpful as well. But there is another situation that I have seen in quite a few of the people that I have worked with, a condition that they have that is not just the normal gassy and bloating. It's actually called SIBO, which is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And essentially, so there's some bacteria that is meant to synthesize vitamins and help eliminate food waste, and that bacteria lives in your colon. But sometimes you can have too much of that bacteria and it backs up kind of into your small intestine, which is where you're supposed to be absorbing vitamins and minerals. But that bacteria that is kind of where it's not supposed to be interferes with the digestive process, and it can lead to a lot of gas, a lot of bloating. Like, people that I've seen that do have this, it is a kind of crazy amount of bloating by the end of the day. And this is something that can only be diagnosed by a doctor. I think they do a breath test for it to measure the amount of methane and hydrogen. And I'm not really sure exactly what the treatment is. I know one of the treatments can be to follow a low FODMAP diet, which I had to write this down because I can never remember what this actually stands for. So FODMAP is an acronym that means fermentable oligodimonosaccharides and polyols. That's a mouthful. And essentially what that is five different types of sugars that you eliminate or eat a very small amount to hopefully kind of starve that type of bacteria. Because remember, they need certain foods to survive. So if you eat a low amount for, they say like a month for most people, that it should starve that colony, hopefully to death in that place. But, you know, see a doctor. The reason I bring this up in the first place is, again, we're not doctors. We don't actually study gut microbiome. We're just interested in it.
And this is the part where I think it's important to, one, not be afraid to take control of our own health and not necessarily trust Western medicine. Get your own tests. Get your own things done. However, also see a gastroenterologist who's going to be able to accurately read out reports like that, especially if it's gotten to the point where you're perhaps in a lot of pain. Like, again, we're not doctors. We don't know where you're at, and food is healing, but there is also some intervention that can be helpful with a professional.
Yeah. So, I mean, the tips that we mentioned in this episode, try those. Try those first. If you try all of these things and they are not helpful to you, go see a doctor. You don't want to be living with some gut condition any longer than you have to, because they can really snowball, and hopefully a doctor can help to put it to rest quickly. Digestive issues are complicated. They are not just like simple fixes. Keep that in mind the next time someone shows up in your inbox telling you they can cure your digestive ailments with a tea or an essential oil or anything like that. No, they can't. They can't, and they are way out of their lane unless they themselves are a doctor, in which case, you know, maybe listen to them. But just keep that in mind. There are small things that you can do to improve your situation. And I personally think that just understanding why it might be happening is really powerful, because when you're in pain and you're embarrassed, it's really easy to just be like, well, this veganism thing obviously isn't for me. It sucks. I'm out. When really it's a transition. Your body is literally trying to transition to having a more healthy variety of gut flora. And it's just an uncomfortable transition, but it's worth the transition.
Yeah. And on a side note, and somewhat of a lighter note, something that I found interesting in my research for this episode is that they are attempting, as in researchers and scientists, are attempting to map a human microbial community. And if you're interested in contributing to the data, you can be part of the Human Gut Project. I'm kind of wondering how you're going to react to this, because I know you can get a little sensitive to your data being out there, like, oh, they're going to use it against us. And they probably will. Like, give them your DNA and they'll use it against you. They'll
find a way. Wait, but I mean, what are they getting? Like, how do you participate? Do you just like poop in a box and mail it to them? Because I'm out.
If that's what you were thinking, then yes.
No, thank you.
That's exactly what they're doing. And I mean, I guess it depends on how courageous you are. For the low, low price of $99, you too can have your poop mapped out and part of a library of research for gut health.
Reminds me of that scene in Tommy Boy. If you want me to take a dump in a box with market guaranteed, I can. I've got free time. Yeah. Anyway. All right. Moving on to our question and answer segment today, I'm really struggling to allow myself these days off and many times only take 1 or 2 days off per 7-day period. Is this hurting my strength gains, or does it really depend on how I feel from week to week?
Okay, good question. First and foremost, I do want to suggest to prioritize rest and recovery just as much as training is prioritized, if not even more. There's only so much fatigue that we can adapt to. And I think it has less to do with how you feel week to week and more about how you feel over a long period of time, because fatigue is one of those things that builds up. And by the time that you're finally willing to admit to yourself, I feel like crap, you've probably been, I don't want to say bordering on being burnt out. However, you're probably at a point where you're going to need to recover from that fatigue, and it won't happen over the course of, say, a week or two. And you literally have to lighten up on your training for sometimes as much as 3, 6 months, or even a year, depending on how hard and how long you've been going for. And this is in terms of, yes, strength and performance and being able to progressively overload over the course of time. The easiest way to protect yourself from worrying about rest days and are you doing enough or are you doing too much is to program deloads into your training blocks. So this is something that I suggest you do only after you've been training for at least 6 months consistently. Once someone has been training for 6 months consistently, every, say, 18 to 24 weeks, they can take a deload. Once they've been training for 1 to 3 years consistently, they can take a deload anywhere from, say, every 6 to 12 weeks. Once you've been training for more than 3 years consistently, consider taking a deload every, say, 4 to 8 weeks. This is where you check in with yourself over the course of a long period of time, over your whole training block every week. How do I feel this week? I feel good. I don't feel good. And you look at how you feel on average over the course of a period of time, and then you realize, okay, this is how often I have to program in deloads. For those of you who are unfamiliar with that word, it literally means lowering the intensity for a full week. So in other words, you go through your training program, same exercises, same sets, same reps, you just go at lower degree of intensity. In other words, 70% of the weight that you would normally use, or 80% of the weight you would normally use, just pick an arbitrary number that will give you the chance to spend a week on recovery every, say, 4 to 24 weeks, depending on how long you've been training consistently. Outside of that, I also don't feel like what we do on a week-to-week basis is as much of a deal breaker as what we do consistently over the period, over a long period of time. So in other words, don't focus on the week-to-week, focus on what you do on average most of the time so that you give yourself a little bit of reprieve and you allow yourself to make sure that you can consistently prioritize training without letting it take over and govern your life. All right, I got a question for you, Danny. I've made a decision to completely forgo any foods that come in packages because I can't stand all the plastic anymore. I'm wondering if it is still possible to build muscle by just eating fruits, veggies, and beans.
You could build muscle eating fruits, veggies, and beans. I would maybe include some nuts or seeds in there as well, at least, but I don't think you have to just eat those things to avoid packaging. There's some YouTube channels out there about being vegan and being very sustainable. Sustainably Vegan is one of them. And another one, I think the name of the channel is Shell Bizzle. She's great. And she does a really good job explaining how a lot of times when you think something is zero waste, it may very well not even be close to zero waste. So you basically just have to do the best that you can do. So when I think about foods that come in packages that you might be avoiding, so I would assume pretty much all of the mock meats that are out there. I think Beyond Sausage just came out with, or Beyond Meat just came out with a breakfast sausage that has no plastic and it's just in a cardboard box. So I think that's a step. But most of the mock meats obviously do come in plastic. The good news is you can make your own mock meats from scratch. You can. Giacomo and I buy a bag of Vital Wheat Gluten. We buy a 50-pound bag maybe twice a year. Is it twice a year?
Roughly.
And it comes in a paper bag. There's no plastic in the bag at all. You can also use tofu in these recipes. Now, tofu typically comes in packages, but you could make your own tofu with soybeans, or depending on where you live, you might be able to find a local tofu maker where you can get it without plastic. Also, COVID definitely complicates this, but obviously there's bulk bins that you can get grains and nuts and seeds and dried fruits and granolas and things like peanut butter, almond butter. I've even seen some places where you can get soaps and oils and vinegars and laundry detergents, all plastic free. Giacomo and I have access to exactly zero of what I just said. So that is a big struggle for us where we live right now. But making the mock meats really does cut down quite a bit on your plastic consumption. Even when you're using bulk bins, it's important to remember that the stuff in the bulk bins did probably come in a plastic bag before it was loaded into the bulk bin. So again, it goes back to like nothing is perfect. You just have to do the best you can do. And I would say educate yourself as much as possible on the manufacturing system that our food comes through. It's really interesting. But as far as building muscle, Yes, it absolutely doesn't have to be complicated at all. You can make your own crackers or chips or cookies or anything. You can make almost anything from scratch using just the raw ingredients, oftentimes that come in paper bags. So I would recommend that rather than just limiting yourself to fruits, vegetables, and beans, because yes, that may be okay for a short period of time, but you're likely to end up with some deficiencies in the long term.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Muscles by Brussels Radio. Keep in touch with us on Facebook in the Muscles by Brussels group, as well as on our Vegan Proteins Facebook page, Instagram, YouTube, and you can also shoot us an email, veganproteins@gmail.com. And if you get a chance, consider leaving us and submitting a review, because it really does help us make a difference by reaching out to other people who would have otherwise not been exposed to this podcast. Once again, my name is Giacomo.
And I'm Danny.
And we'll talk to you soon.